So you graduated La Trobe High School, and then where'd you go from there?
Went to Dartmouth College, where I was going to study for the diplomatic corps. And so I took Romance Language Studies there. But all of a sudden I thought, you know, I really want to study music. And I talked with the man who was the head of the music department there, and he said, Fred, we won't have this department ready for you in the 4 years that you'll be here. Why don't you take a look at the place that I just came from, which is Rollins College? And so on my Easter vacation, I went down to Florida, to Winter Park, and there were a group of kids who met me at the airport, and they took me all around. Among that group was Joanne Bird, who later became Mrs. Rogers. But at any rate, it was just the opposite of Dartmouth, I felt. I mean, Dartmouth was very cold, and Rollins was very warm. And I just felt so much at home there. And so the next year, I went to Rollins. I had had 2 years at Dartmouth, and I got 1 year credit at Rollins. And there, I declared a music major in composition and studied with all of the people in the conservatory. There was a conservatory of music there, and wonderful people. Jack Carter was my major professor, and the Carlos, Alphonse Carlo, the Baroness von Bokop was my French professor. I had a minor in French, and she encouraged me to do stuff on the stage. I had never done anything on the stage, but she forced me in these little French productions. And I remember doing something from L'Aiglon. Said, "Au meurtrier, justice, justice." Well, at any rate, I don't think I ever wanted, though, to be on the stage. I'm much rather doing things in the background. And so I graduated from Rollins in 51 with a Bachelor of Music degree. And by then, I was accepted at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. Well, it was called Western Theological Seminary in Pittsburgh. And I was supposed to go there the following fall. But I went home my senior year for a vacation in La Trobe, and I saw this new thing called television. And I saw people throwing pies in each other's faces. And I thought, this could be a wonderful tool for education. Why is it being used this way? And so I said to my parents, you know, I don't think I'll go to seminary right away. I think maybe I'll go into television. And they said, well, but you've never even seen it. And I said, well, I've seen enough of it here that I'd like to try. So I applied for any position that I could have at NBC in New York. And I was accepted, probably because I had this degree in music. And they wanted an assistant to work on the music program. So in, I think it was October 1st of 1951, I started at NBC.
Before we start, let's talk a little bit more about the first time you saw television. Do you remember the program that you saw?
I don't. I just remember, it was a program where people were dressed up in some kinds of costumes or something, and They literally were putting pies in each other's faces. And I was astounded at that. I didn't watch much else. I just thought, hey, let's see what we can do with this.
How did you link it in your mind to education so quickly? Was that was education something that was very dear to you at that point?
I think it always has been. I always loved my teachers. Especially the teacher. For instance, when I was a senior in high school, a friend of mine taught me to fly in a little Piper Cub. And he was so enthusiastic about flying. I know that's why I wanted to learn. And the best teacher in the world is somebody who loves what he or she does and just loves it in front of you. And that's what I like to do with the neighborhood. I love to have guests and present a whole smorgasbord of ways for the children to choose. I mean, some child might choose painting, some child might choose playing the cello, but there are so many ways of saying who we are and how we feel, ways that don't hurt anybody. And it seems to me that that's a great gift. Well, television can do that all the time. Can present enthusiastic teachers. When I was working, now this is later, but when I was working in the master's program of child development, I was at this nursery school, and the director, Margaret McFarland, had invited this man from Carnegie Mellon to come and just sculpt, just love clay in front of the children. So once a week, this very fine sculptor would come and, you know, just, she said, I don't want you teaching sculpting. I want you simply to sit with the children and do what you feel you'd like to do with the clay. Well, the kids started using clay, that medium, in the most wonderful ways. And that wouldn't have happened if this gifted sculptor hadn't loved clay right in front of them. So, you know, the television can be such a fabulous teacher.
So your first years in television, you worked on a few shows that were music-based.
Yes, yeah, in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, describe the NBC offices you worked in a little bit. Who was there?
Oh, the all of television was on one floor of the RKO building on Avenue of Americas. I remember that when you got off the elevator, you turned to the right, and the first few offices you came to were the Today Show. And who was the host of the early Today Show?
Was it Garraway?
I'm trying to remember. No. Dave Garraway. Dave Garraway's office was there. And then turned to the right, and there was, wish David were here, he could tell me. This was a woman who used to sit, she just sat, and I don't know that she sang, but she was on one of the programs, and she just, Dagmar. That was, and her office was just down the way a bit. And then came our offices, which were the offices of the NBC Opera Theater, with Kirk Browning and Cookie, Schatzenoff and Peter Herman Adler. And I was in the little office with Charlie Polachek. Charles Polachek was the producer of the NBC Opera Theater, and I was the assistant to the producer. Now that meant going and getting coffee and Cokes, and you know, that was a wonderful experience for me. That and something that happened one time in Switzerland, those two things, I think, helped me enormously. I mean, who would have ever thought that somebody would want my autograph, you know, or want to take my picture? That wasn't what I was in it for. This all evolved, you know. That's what's so interesting. Anyway, when you serve people Cokes and coffees and whatever they might want, you see what people are like. And I'll never forget the day, and I can't tell you who it was. Somebody said to me, "I wanted milk and not sugar." I just felt crestfallen. I mean, I did my best to bring what I was asked to bring to people for refreshment, you know. And I'll never forget how that felt. Of course, I went off and got the correct thing. But the other time, while I'm thinking about it, is that my wife and I were at the same hotel as this very famous movie star. And at the swimming pool, everybody was taking her picture. Well, I guess I made the mistake of asking her if it would be all right if I could take her picture. And she said, "I'd rather not." And I think of that every time anybody asks if they could take my picture with them. And I invariably say, "Of course." You know, maybe that's just because I'm who I am and she was who she, I don't know. But I know that it affected me. So where were we?
We're talking about you're starting at NBC. Let's talk about some of the shows. This first NBC television opera, what exactly was it? Can you describe it for us?
The NBC Opera Theater was, these were special programs in which operas were put on to television. I think one of the first ones we did was Pique Dame, the Queen of Spades by Tchaikovsky. And that was out at the old Brooklyn studio. I think that was at 106th Street in Brooklyn. And it literally operas that Kirk Browning would translate to television. Kirk was the director. And Charlie Polachek was the producer. And it was Samuel Schatzenoff who had talked with David Sarnoff. David Sarnoff was head of RCA, and Samuel Schatzenoff was head of all of music of NBC. He was a music critic for the New York Herald, and David Sarnoff asked him if he would come and take charge of music on NBC. Well, it was he who had had the foresight to invite Arturo Toscanini to come and take over the NBC Symphony. Toscanini was living in Italy on his little island called Isolina in Lago di Garda. And he listened on a radio to the NBC Symphony. So that I'm told that the first time he met the symphony, he already had notes of what he wanted the different people to do. That was a wonderful collaboration. David Sarnoff, Samuel Schatzenoff, Toscanini, a very young composer by the name of Menotti, was invited to write an opera for the NBC Opera Theater. That's how Amahl and the Night Visitors came to be.
Can you describe that for us?
They wanted a Christmas opera. And so Menotti actually wrote it for the NBC Opera Theater. After the dress rehearsal, Toscanini said to Menotti in Italian, "This is the best you've ever done." And of course, Amahl and the Night Visitors continues now on stages, and even puppet theaters have done it and done it well. Radio began as a vehicle to broadcast classical music. Television in the early days was doing the same thing. Until television became such a tool for selling, it was a fabulous medium for education. That's what I had always hoped that it would be. And of course, that's why I moved from NBC to Pittsburgh. But that's a little later on in the story. But I finally got to be floor manager of the NBC Opera Theater. And that was a joyous time for me.
Well, that was all live, right?
It was all live, yeah.
Well, talk about the phenomenon of live television and what kinds of things happened on stage as the cameras were on. What were the most important things to remember about staging an opera on television?
Well, that you're going to find out from Kirk Browning, because Kirk is one of the finest directors for music that there is. He's still directing live from Lincoln Center, and he directed Streetcar Named Desire who composed that? He was the conductor here in Pittsburgh. He's a pianist as well. Know his name as well as my own, but it'll come to me. At any rate, he always wanted to write an opera, and he always wanted it to be the one I just mentioned. Anyway. I'm thinking about too many things. they're all just come flooding back, when you ask me these questions. And it's funny to be at this end of the spectrum. As I'm thinking about all of these times, we did a Bernstein opera at NBC. Leonard Bernstein was commissioned to write one. And he wrote an opera called Trouble in Tahiti. And I remember the lead, Elaine Malbon, or I think it was. But you'll have that in your archives. That's the nice thing. Hopefully these are on tape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. At any rate, something happened at the dress rehearsal, and the lead said, I'm not going to do it. Well, I mean, it was scheduled to be broadcast that night, and as you say, everything was live then. Well, my wife took the lead to our apartment and gave her a cup of tea and talked. Joanna's a wonderful person. And somehow, magically, you know, brought her back to the studio, and they went on with the program. I don't know, maybe it was just to get some attention. I don't know what it was, but that was one of the dramas not on screen that might be fun for people to... There's the major dramas in life are never center stage, and they're rarely under the bright lights. They're always happening off camera. And I think for people who might be wading through all of this material in the archives, you know, it that might be one of the best things to remember. That the best things of life are way off stage. Never highly touted. You know, it's the little epiphanies of life that matter most. It's those moments when somebody will tell you, you know, you really did help me in a way that you could have never known just by being there and just by being you.
Let's go off stage on your career a little bit. Can you tell me the duties of being a floor manager at NBC?
First of all, I timed programs. This was even before I was assistant and had to time the program called The Voice of Firestone. And that was scary because, you know, we had to get off the air at just the right second, otherwise you'd be cut off the air. But I floor managed the hit parade, and I'll never forget Mr. Lanson, Snooky Lanson, that used to go with the stagehands and play craps behind the set, and I'd have to say, Mr. Lanson, you're on next. And so he said, okay, Fred. And then he would come and get out in front of the thing and do his song, you know, and then that would be over, and he'd go and play again. And Dorothy Collins, her husband was the conductor of the orchestra of the hit parade. And June Valley. I never forget, she had a big white suitcases, and after the program was over, I helped her down to get a cab. She was going somewhere with these big white suitcases. It's funny the things you remember. Yeah. But those, you know, to think that you would do something like that live. I mean, we had 7 and 8 sets in one studio and 2 floor managers.
Who was the other floor manager that you worked with?
It could be anybody. on the crew. You know, you were assigned to these different programs. But Kate Smith was another program that, that I floor managed.
Did you deal with her a lot, with Kate?
Well, she was a very imposing person. And her mother and her dog were with her all the time. She had some of the first contact lenses that I had ever seen. I guess maybe the earliest ones. They looked like fish bowls, and they covered the entire ball of the eye. And to get them in must have just been excruciating. And she also wore a huge corset. I mean, it was almost like an iron lung that she would get in and they would pull, you know. And she sat behind the big, big bouquet of flowers that covered up some of her. But she was an enormous woman. She had one of the most beautiful natural voices that ever was. It was just a glorious instrument. There was one funny day. Didn't seem funny then, but she was standing in front of this painted set that was a farmhouse singing one of her songs. It wasn't When the Moon Comes Over the Mountain, because that was always the opening song. It was some farm song, I guess. At any rate, I thought it was over. And so I gave a cue to the stagehand to raise the scenery so that we could get on to the next scene. Well, the song wasn't over. There was just a little bit left, kind of a coda that she was going to say something, and I hadn't been told. And so the set started to go up. And on camera, of course, that looked like Miss Smith was going down into the ground. Well, I was watching the monitor, and I knew exactly what had happened, so then I stopped the rising of the set. But I'll never forget. It was just like having her descend. But it was live, you know, and people were very forgiving with live television.
Okay, there's some other features. Did you have anything to do with the private lives of Ethel and Albert? That was one of the features on the show.
No, but I did know Ted Collins. I didn't know him personally, but he would come in, and he and Miss Smith would have dialogue times.
Now, who was he? What was
he? Was a producer.
Okay, let's stop here to change the tape.